Bob Mitchell, our special guest, back with us, of course. We're going to talk about his latest work, What If? Close Encounters of the Unusual Kind. A little paranormal night on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Bob Mitchell back with us. He is a Canadian author, journalist, covered crime and sports for the Toronto Star for more than 35 years. He's been a field investigator for MUFON based in Ontario, an executive with MUFON Canada as well, co-founder of the Toronto News Service at Tor News Wire. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Bob, you've been busy.
I certainly have, George, and it's good to talk to you again.
You too, my friend. What If? Close Encounters of the Unusual Kind. I like that title.
Yeah, and you know, I was just listening to the last hour to your previous guest, and although my book's all about aliens and what if the world we live in really isn't the world we think it is, I kind of think your last guest put that in perspective, too, that even without the aliens, the world we live in isn't what we really think it is.
No, it's a tough place to live right now for a lot of people.
Unbelievable.
Do you feel that? You're still in Canada, right?
Yes, yes.
How do they feel about things going on worldwide these days?
Well, you know, we're very interested in the election here. I mean, it's almost like reality TV here. I know the ratings are huge when the Republican debates are on, and they're huge up here, too. Everybody seems to be fascinated. They can't believe that the Americans are supporting Trump the way they are. And in fact, some Americans that I've talked to, they almost sometimes seem embarrassed that they're Americans, but it's such a fascinating election. I mean, up here when we had our election, we couldn't even get the debates on regular TV. It was all on internet-based, and hardly anybody even knew when they were on. But I think everybody in Canada who is interested in it knows exactly when the debates are on, if they're on CNN or Fox or wherever, and it's almost must-see TV up here.
Well, you know what's amazing, Bob? Most Canadians know who our president is and who the candidates are.
Absolutely.
Yet most Americans probably didn't even know the name Justin Trudeau.
Oh, but probably not. I always remember when I was in my high school years, we went on a band trip down to Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, which I believe is right in the heart of Quakerism down in Pennsylvania. And we had to go
Quakers
to their,
and Amish,
school that morning. Amish, that's it, yeah. And we had to go to their high school that morning, and people just stared at us, because when we got off the bus, we had Native Canadians, we had Indians, we had Chinese, and they hadn't seen anybody like us before. And I remember the two questions they asked me, and one of them, they both were, do you have hospitals up there, and do you have circuses? And I could never figure out why those two questions were so important to them. But, I mean, I live in Toronto, a modern city in the world, and, they had this really backwards town. But they were completely clueless about what Canada was all about. And I think a lot of Americans are still the same today.
Yeah, I think so, too. So tell me a little bit about the title, What If?
Well, last summer I was one of the speakers at the Alien Cosmic Expo in my hometown of Brantford, and I actually ended up being the opening act to get people warmed up. And when I thought about everybody that was going to be on that over the weekend, talking to all the guests that are attending the convention, I thought, you know, my goodness, there's such an overwhelming list of speakers. And we're going to hear some really incredible things over the weekend, from government cover-ups to abductions, visitation, crop circles, and even Len Kasten was there to talk about an interstellar exchange between the U.S. and otherworldly beings that supposedly occurred in the 1960s and conceived by President John F. Kennedy. So I thought, what if only one or two of the speakers that were speaking over the weekend were actually telling something that actually happened? And I thought, wouldn't that change your world? Wouldn't that mean the reality you lived in really wasn't you thought it was? And then I took it further, and I thought, well what if, you know, half a dozen or 12 or all 24 people had something to say that was actually based in truth and reality? It would be completely mind-boggling. That would be game changers. And really, what if they were right? It would have to mean that what we thought was really our reality really wasn't what our reality was. So that's where the title of the book came from. And the seven people that I interviewed for this book all had completely different experiences. And again, if only one of them is actually telling something that actually happened and not just something that they think happened, well, that would mean, you know, the world we live in really isn't the world we live in, and it would should change the way we look at things.
One of your other books, of course, called Intrusion, Alien Encounters. This one is different.
Yes, very much different. The first book involved people who basically kept their encounters secret for most of their lives until they were in their 50s. And one by one, they sought me out. And in fact, after my last appearance on your show, I had people calling me up who had kept things hidden all their life. But the fact that I was there, be able to listen to them and not judge them, they wanted to tell me their stories too. So I thank you for that. But these people had experiences that they were, you know, not embarrassed, but they just kept to themselves. And finally, when they told me everything that happened to them, they unburdened themselves. They felt like an entire elephant had lifted off their shoulder. They became more open, more talkative to people, and they just felt free. The people in my book right now, What If Close Encounters of the Usual Kind, they didn't give me the same sense that telling me their stories unburdened them. It was more of a sense that they were almost in awestruck that these things had happened to them, and they were very glad that somebody like me was able to, you know, spend hours listening to their story without, again, judging them. The way I look at things is that, you know, unless you've actually experienced what these people experience, it's pretty hard for you to judge them and say they're crackpots or insane because you haven't walked in their shoes. I can only tell you that everybody that I talk to absolutely believes the stories they told me, and they absolutely believe they experienced the wonderment and the horrors. And all seven people that I talked to had completely different stories that I had never heard most of ever before.
Well, now let's talk about some of the cases in your book. First of all, how did you find them? How did you find the people?
Some of them found me and I found them. When I was at the Alien Cosmic Expo, a couple of them came up to me and we arranged to meet later on. Probably the two most interesting ones in my book, Satya Anand, who is a Toronto-based director and producer of daytime-winning Emmy shows. He was at the show, and we talked a bit, and then we got together to later in the summer to talk about his experiences, because he was enthralled by what I was telling on the stage about the mantid experiences that some of the people in my first book had talked about. So he had his own experience. And another one came on an email that was originally sent to Ottawa, an Ottawa paranormal group, and they didn't know what to make of it, and they sent it off to MUFON Ontario, and MUFON Ontario head, Stu Bundy, he sent it to me, and that's Sinta Eja Narat, that she's the law enforcement officer from Nova Scotia who claims to be in telepathic connection with the Greys that a good part of my book deals with. But, you know, people sought me out, and they're still calling me. I'm getting calls from people in Florida and from New York who they've heard me talk about the experiences that people have told me, and they just feel it's time that they told their stories too. So it seems to be a groundswell out there.
All right, let's talk a little bit about this Narat woman and tell us more about this, because this is an incredible case.
This is Sinta you're talking about?
Yeah.
You're saying? Yeah, she is, you know, a lot of people are going to read that chapter in my book and think, well, my God, you know, this woman is completely insane. And I have to admit that when I first started talking to her and through emails and conversations, I kind of thought that too.
You thought she was a little wacky?
I did, and in fact, one of our first conversations, she even admitted to me that most people would think she's insane, and she even started doubting herself at some point, but she went on to say that if she has gone insane, she's gone insane in the most unusual and most beautiful way, because she has had telepathic communications with a being that has not only told her everything about the Gray Society, but she has also learned their language, their music, their lifestyle, the society, their government, you name it, she's been taught it. And she has some really interesting claims to make about who the Grays are. And the only thing I can say about her is that if we believe anything that she says to me, then it would absolutely mean that almost everything else we know about aliens or think we know about aliens is almost completely untrue. Because she claims right off the top that the Grays, which they actually they don't call themselves the Grays, they call themselves the Ataraku.
Ataratu.
Ataraku, A-T-A-R-A-C-O.
Where are they apparently from, Bob?
From the Orion constellation, and their home planet is called Natara Neri.
So they have learned a different propulsion system, no doubt.
Oh, they have. Well, everything is done by light and energy, light energy and magnetic, and they don't use anything like we know. But she told me right off the bat that they are the only species that have ever visited Earth. And that took me by complete surprise because, everybody I've talked to, people have had...
we've talked about reptilians, the Nordics looking, all that.
All that, right? And so how do you try to figure out what she's saying with everything else you know? And what I've come to conclusion is that if she is in contact with the being she says she is, then they're not telling her the truth. And if they're not telling her the truth, I have to figure out why aren't they.
Well, yeah, that's the bigger story. If they're lying, then there's something sinister here.
Well, that's what I wondered, because you know when you talk to people about if you ask the average ufologist or people that are just interested in aliens, you ask them, well, what do you know about the Grays? And almost everybody will say, well, there's these little gray, menacing creatures with big black eyes, and they're sinister, and that they're abducting humans for medical experiments and possibly using us as a food source, and they're also operating under an agreement with governments to allow for abductions and experimentation in return for, our advanced technology, things like that. And nobody thinks of them as, star beings from far away who are completely benevolent. They think of them as sinister beings. And she says that's not the case at all, that it's our governments who are make them to look like they are the bad guys, and in return, they're not. They just want to keep an eye on Earth. They want to bring peace to mankind. And
well, they're not doing a very good job of that, Bob.
No, they're not. But again, I have to wonder, if they are telling her the truth and she is in contact with these beings, why are they lying to her? Because it seems to be that it some of the things they're telling you can't possibly
well,
be true.
But we know for a fact, based on testimony, that we have been visited by many different species.
That's what I told her.
The praying mantis looking, all of them.
And people I've talked to have given me the same story. But she insists that while there are other beings in the universe, on other planets, none of them are as advanced as the Ataraku. And they don't have the technology to come here.
I mean, they clearly don't sound like the Anunnaki that Zechariah Sitchin wrote about in his Earth Chronicles.
No, they don't, except that part of their religion is that they were created by their god named Inuk Hanuk, and it is the same god that we worship, they say. And you know, if you say Inuk Hanuk all in one word, and maybe add an I to it, the Inuk Hanuki.
Enki.
It sometimes sounds like Anunnaki, and she claims that the Anunnaki that we have been led to believe, you know, came to Earth and started mankind, were really them. That it was just the way the people interpreted the word Anunnaki.
Well, that's possible.
I don't know. It's possibly plausible, but as you said, there are so many other people out there who had so many other experiences, particularly the mantids, which is really interesting to me, because I've developed another theory on the mantids based on one of the persons in my book and comparing it to the first book that I wrote.
These are the praying mantis-looking creatures?
Yes. And there's no praying mantis creatures as far as the Adiraku are concerned. They just don't exist. So,
but we think they do, don't we?
Well, the people I've talked to say they not only do, but we may be them, which brings us to another topic.
What do you mean we may be them?
Well, one of the people in my book, Satya Anand, that's his name. That's his Himalayan name. He actually lived for 29 years in the Himalayas.
And I'm sure some people made up their names. Probably
didn't want to give you the real names. This is actually his real name from the Himalayas. In my book, I use that real name, but it's not the name that people would know him by here in North America. And one of the reasons we haven't used his real name is that he's involved in some negotiations right now for a big project he's involved in, and he wasn't sure whether the people who were going to give him the money would want to deal with him if they let it be known that he had this strange and unbelievable experience. But so right at the last moment, we actually changed his name to his Himalayan name, but that is his real Himalayan name. And basically, you know, if I go back to my last book, two of the people in my last book had mantis experiences where, and their experiences were exactly like almost everybody who's had a mantis experience, where instead of fearing these insectoid creatures, they felt nothing but love, overwhelming love, in fact, that they would do them no harm, that they would protect them, and that they would, as long as they were around, they would be safe and mm-hmm. no harm would come to them. They'd return to where they were brought. In my latest book with this producer, he had a reincarnation experience with one of them. And he had lots of experiences with meditation, and being in the Himalayas, he learned from the enlightened master about the source of our power, the source of the humanity, and believe wholeheartedly in reincarnation. But during one of his out-of-body experiences, he found himself in the middle of outer space, and then out of our solar system, and was just floating around in the darkness. Now, you got to remember, he had never heard of the mantids in his life before. He had heard of the greys, and like most people, he knew what they looked like, and that was what aliens basically were. In fact, I don't even think he had heard of the reptilians at the time. But so he's floating out there, and all of a sudden, this huge 30-foot mantid comes in front of him. And before he can even sense fear or just like complete aghast, an overwhelming feeling of love overtook him.
Hold on, Bob. Let's talk more about all of these cases when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Bob Mitchell with us. Bob, let's get back into some of these cases, the mantids that you were talking about. How big was that creature?
30 feet, at least 30 feet tall.
My gosh.
Its head was about 8 feet tall alone. And you know, imagine seeing that in the middle of the vastness of space. your first thought you would think would be horror and extreme terror and almost having a heart attack. But as I said, Satya didn't have any of those emotions. He had nothing but overwhelming love. But then there was something else that suddenly came into his senses, and that was that for some reason there was a tremendous familiarity with this unusual creature, and almost to the point that he had the sense that they had been together before. And that really stunned him to the point where he telepathically started communicating with this creature, and he asked the creature, when you think of being before, he said, you know, in my human form or in your form. And the insectoid creature pointed to itself, and he got the impression that he was saying, no, we've been together in insectoid form before. And that really blew his mind, because he really believed in reincarnation, and through all his life he believed, you know, he had past lives, and he never questioned that, but it never occurred to him at all that when you reincarnated, that you could reincarnate in a form of a being on another planet in another solar system. And at this point, he realized that the human consciousness is just oneness with the entire universe. The more he talked to this creature, the more he found out that they not only had been together before, but they probably were together as some form of partnership or mate, husband and wife in an insectoid body, and they would be together again, not in a human form, but in an insectoid form. So the two things he took away from that was that he didn't even know what this creature was until he got back from, you know, after this experience. He started looking things up on the internet and found a creature that looked like that. But the new reincarnation process for him was that you could reincarnate anywhere in the universe, and that he had saw a creature that he had never heard of before, so it was never in his consciousness even to think about this creature. So I started thinking about the people in my other book, why they were so unafraid and so felt nothing but love for these mantis creatures, and they had a familiarity too. So perhaps the familiarity and love is that in another life they too had been mantids, and maybe that's why I would think almost everybody I've ever heard of before who has had an experience with a mantis or an insectoid always has this overwhelming love.
Did any of these people, Bob, undergo hypnosis or anything like that?
Yes. One of the people in my previous book that had a mantis experience underwent hypnosis, and she completely told the exact same story that she told me without going under hypnosis. She expanded a little bit under hypnosis, but the same feeling of the mantis and love was there. Satya Anand, who had this experience with this creature in outer space, he hasn't undergone hypnosis, but he's so tuned into the world of meditation and reincarnation that he absolutely now believes that that the universal consciousness of mankind, that we're not just in this body, but we incarnate in all kinds of bodies and all kinds of universes.
So with all these different encounters from all these different people, what have you concluded?
I'm still on the fence about whether all of their experiences are actually happened to them. I know that they absolutely believe that they believe it has happened to them. I think the reincarnation thing has opened my eyes a bit more, because it just seems so logical that if reincarnation does happen, that we can incarnate on other in other bodies and other extraterrestrials. I mean, to us they're extraterrestrials, but to them we're the extraterrestrials. So I think the reincarnation is something that I'm leaning more and more to. The other thing that struck me a little bit from the people that I've talked to in this book is that people talk about abductions as being abducted in a physical body. They feel that, they're taken out of their bedroom and suddenly they're in a spaceship or somewhere else. And they're having this encounter, and sometimes it's extremely scary that medical experiments are being done to them. But they're being done to them in a physical body. But a lot of them tell me that the experience begins with an out-of-body experience, that they are somehow leaving their body and they see a 360-degree vision where they see a vision, they feel they have eyes, but they don't have a body. Yet when they get to where they're getting, they have a body and they feel physical pain. So does that mean we can be in two places at once? I'm not so sure that that's what's happening, but what's ever happening is that the oneness of the universe seems to be able to bring us to other points in the universe and still have a physical presence while still being at home. Because how many people have said that, they're sleeping with their partner and their partner says that they've been abducted, but the person beside them has no idea that's happened.
Right. Well, and has never seen them leave or anything like that.
Right. Maybe it's because that they never leave their physical body, but somehow whoever is taking them is able to put them back in a physical body in another dimension, perhaps. Because one of the ladies that's in my book, Josie, I mean, she has had some very terrifying experiences where she knows she's having an out-of-body experience. She feels herself, flying. And in fact, at some point, she feels she's inside the body of a bird, and she's flying everywhere. But then the next moment, she's on a spaceship, lying on a table, and she's physically feeling pain, and the pain is overwhelming to her. And this is happening over and over again over a period of nights. And yet, when she, when it's over, she's back in her bed. Now she has a daughter. I think she's 6 or 7 year old daughter, and the daughter never says that mother has gone missing, and she feels that she's still in her bed, but somehow she's in a physical body somewhere. I'm thinking that perhaps the abduction scenarios that people have experienced is far different than they really believe, that there's something else going on here.
Well, Bob, Dr. David Jacobs is a believer that there's a very nefarious purpose here, something very, very evil.
Yeah, and more people seem to don't remember the horrors anymore. It's almost as if anything is happening to them, there's blackness and they don't remember it. They remember it as being taken somewhere, but they don't remember what's happened to them. But they have this sense that they saw beings, or the beings came and got them, but they don't remember the horrors. But some people do remember the horrors, so it's real to them. So again, are there different aliens, different species doing different things? And some are nice, some are bad. Cinta Narat says no, but the evidence seems overwhelming that there is a lot of different species out there doing, some of them doing nasty things and some of them maybe doing helpful things to us.
So with all these different encounters, do you think that, let's go back a little bit to the original ones that
sure.
The woman had talked about, which you called what again?
What which one were you talking about?
The ones from the...
Cinta Narat.
The Orion area.
Yes, yes.
What are they?
Ataraku.
And they're the ones that look like the Greys.
She says they look like the Greys. She has, she gets telepathic images to her, and she draws them. And she's had quite a few drawings in my book, and some of them very realistic. And they look... I mean, I won't say they look like the Greys that we normally think of Greys, but they do have a similarity to the Greys that we, see in books and movies and television shows. but they're more softer. They don't have the menacing look. And again, whether it's all telepathic, so whatever thoughts they are putting in her head, if they are putting them in her head, they're making themselves look, I think, better than they are. And again, why? It poses the question that they're lying to her, and they must have a reason for lying. And I can't figure that out at this point, unless they want her to spread the word that they're the good guys, and not to be afraid that if you're taken, that nothing harmful is going to happen to you. But then it does. So because it just doesn't make sense, a lot of the things she says, although she does tell me everything about the society or where they're from, how long they've been around here, and even their connection to the evolution of mankind.
You seem like you have some doubts about her, though.
I do have some doubts about her, only because I've interviewed so many other people that have had so many different experiences. I think I would have a much better feeling for her stories if she told me, yes, you know, the mantids do exist, and reptilians do exist, and there's this war going on, or we're trying to be the peacemakers in here. But she just completely says that they don't exist, that they're figments of our imagination, that they've been put there by psychiatrists, that they've been part of a childhood trauma that just sort of comes up when people have nightmares, and they automatically go to the fact that aliens abduct them, and they don't really want to deal with the trauma that has really caused these nightmares, so they create things in their mind. And the fact that she says that governments have been misleading the public for all these years. And I think people who have been in the business that investigating UFOs are quite aware of all the stories about how Eisenhower was supposed to go and meet with an alien group. Back
Valiant Thor from Venus is who he was supposed to have met with.
Oh, yeah, Thor, yeah.
And they rejected him. The Joint Chiefs did not want anything to do with him and the things that he was bringing to the planet.
Oh, right. I mean, she says that the Atoraku wanted to... they're part of this reincarnation process too. That she says that the Atoraku, the members of their air force, which is called the Atakaru, they are assigned specific people on Earth when they're reborn, and they give them the knowledge that most humans don't have, and these are child prodigies such as Einstein and Tesla and Newton and Galileo, and they want these knowledge to be used for the good and benefit of mankind, but governments take this over and turn them into military technology, and not for the good of mankind. And she says that they just don't want to give this to mankind anymore until mankind just forgets about war.
How many people, Bob, did you interview that claimed to have been abducted?
Almost everyone except this one claimed to be abducted. But even abduction may not be the right word anymore if they're actually having these out-of-body experiences,
right,
and they're being taken somewhere.
But how many people?
Six of the seven people from this book right now, and all five of the people in my last book. So there's 12.
Now, did you notice any similarities, any common denominator here with them?
Well, there was a big common denominator with the mantids, which we've always talked about. The other common denominator is that there's a blackness or a blackout period almost with all of them at some point during their experience. They get to a point where either something is enjoyable or something is about to harm them, or they fear something's going to harm them, and then there's a blackout and they don't remember anything past that point. And then they're back where they were taken or where they had this experience. It seems to be almost universal in that. And people that aren't in this book, people I've talked to on the phone, you know, they all tell me the same thing, that they get to a point where their memory just doesn't let them go any further than what they're allowed to remember. And perhaps that's a fail-safe mechanism, because maybe what's happening is far too horrible to imagine, that they don't want people to imagine this.
But did any of them in hypnosis or anything like that have a bad experience?
While they were under hypnosis?
Yeah, did they report on having a bad experience?
Well, the bad experience was when they were scared, when they were coming, like a couple of them had experiences where they felt these entities were coming through the walls in their home, and they were just terrified at that point. And you could see in their emotions, they were crying during the hypnosis, that their breathing was getting heavier and heavier. None of them had horrible experience where they felt that they were having experiments done to them, other than the lady that I talked about, Josie, but she was not ever put under hypnosis. She just had this conscious recall on it. I think most of the people I've talked to, they don't really have a horrible experience. It's more of a terror when it happens, but then when they're experiencing the things, it's more of wonderment. And you know, they want to know more about their experience.
Were the Greys the same as the ones that apparently crashed at Roswell?
Yes. Cinta has told me that the story of Roswell is absolutely true in the sense that they did crash, but some of the stuff that's happened since then isn't true. And what she expanded on that was that there were seven beings altogether. Five died instantly, and two survived. But the story making the rounds, I think, in a lot of the ufologists, is that one of those two was kept alive for years and may still be alive getting information. She says that they both died within a week of each other.
Were they all biological, or were they part human, or rather part biological, part machine?
No, they're all biological. She says that the Adder Raku, they are flesh and bone, and their physiology is very similar to humans. The big difference is their appearance. Their brain is larger, and their fingers are longer. And not all of them have four fingers. Some have five, some have four, and it depends on the area they're from. They basically, the females and the males basically look alike, except the females have a more elongated head. But they're biological entities. They're not mechanical.
They're not cyborgs or anything like that.
And she also says it's ridiculous for people to say that they walk through walls. They say they don't have that capability. But again, I have talked to so many people who swear up and down that their first encounter occurred when they walked through their wall.
All right, we're going to come back and take some phone calls now. Your stories, your questions, maybe you've had an abduction case that you want to share.